can we start first with the actual announcement that was made in relation to the entire connector? The landfall area in particular will be of particular interest to a lot of people. But first of all, I suppose, a little overview of where all this is coming from. What's actually this Airgrid connector, this Celtic connector? I know it's part of the programme for government, but can you explain to our listeners what it's actually all about and how long the process has been in the melting pot?
Yes. So it's important to point out to people for who are not aware. So the interconnector is one phrase, the Celtic interconnector is another. You'll also hear the phrase Airgrid, which is the management agency running the project. What it is it's a huge undersea power cable that will connect the grid in Ireland, or electricity grid for the entire country, to the entire energy grid in France and continental Europe, which currently doesn't exist. It also gives Ireland the capacity to both import energy from Europe and also export our excess energy. So for a good example in Ireland is that we have extraordinarily windy weather from time to time. So the wind energy that we're generating in terms of a surplus will now be able to be exported to the continent. And in times in where we need to import energy, we can do it. And what it's going to mean for ordinary consumers out there is that it's going to cut the cost of electricity in their individual pockets. But also there's a kind of a deeper meaning for East Cork and for y'all in all of this, with the news this morning that it's been confirmed that Airgrid intend to land the cable in y'all. It'll represent the single largest capital project in the history of the town, coming in at over €1 billion. So it's an extraordinarily large project. It will generate a significant number of jobs. It's quite hard yet to give an accurate picture of what that's going to look like. But in terms of the news that people in y'all have been waiting for an awful long time about jobs, employment and industry, this is the start of something very special, and we need to make sure that we get everything right, and as a town that we can identify the benefits in this for us and how we can exploit those benefits as well.
Right. Now, I see from the update we have on it that it's going to land at Claycastle. The landfall is going to be at Claycastle. That has been decided.
There was
two or three different locations that they were considering.
Yes.
Up along the line, but Claycastle. Have we any idea where in Claycastle, where it's going to go from Claycastle?
Yes, so I think a rough estimation is it'll be quite near where we'll say the pipe goes out at Claycastle, where the off run from the bog.
Right, the end of the promenade in effect.
Exactly, around that region, right. towards the end of the car park. They were doing a lot of surveying there recently. There's still surveying actually ongoing between Castle Martyr and Killa. So what will happen is that the cable will land. There's also going to be a high-speed fibre optic cable coming in from France as well. That cable then will go directly on up to Cork. So it's going to go up along the N25. It'll go below, actually. It's going to hit our own land at home where I'm living. And it's going to go along the N25 towards Killa. And this is where things get a little bit tricky, and it's very important to point out the process for Killa and Castle Martyr is still ongoing. So something I've been putting an awful lot of work in as a Yall and Killa area based TD, really, is my home parish and my own neck of the woods where I grew up and was raised, is to ensure that Killa Village and Castle Martyr Village don't have to have the cable run down the main street of the village, because that would cause extraordinary disruption, in my opinion. It's something that I have been working with Airgrid on a continuous basis and we've been discussing that at quite a senior level. So they haven't determined whether or not they're going to do that yet. And what I'm trying to make happen is to see that the cable will come to the south side of Killa Village and will come along and cut off at the N25 to the south, and it will join the road at a later stage. And the same thing will happen in Castle Martyr, except it will swing off to the north, which also coincides with another project that I've been putting a monumental level of effort into, which is to upgrade the N25 between Middleton and Yall. Something I actually spoke this morning with Taoiseach Micheál Martin about was regarding making sure that there's a degree of cooperation between Airgrid and between Transport Infrastructure Ireland to ensure that we can identify a future relief road route to coincide with the Airgrid interconnector. And that would mean then that people living up in here in Yall or in West Waterford that are listening today and living throughout East Cork that have to go through Castle Martyr and Killa at the minute won't be held up in terms of roadworks if the cable was to go through the village. So that's crucial, and I think it's very important to hammer that point home. And it has to be acknowledged as well, the level of interest that has been shown by the public. So many people voiced their concerns regarding that at the consultations. I know yourself were at the consultations
as well.
Yeah,
they were very well run, to be fair.
But that was something that was remarked to me as of early as this morning as well.
Right, because like it goes without saying that if they're talking about moving on to the N25,
yeah,
that's going to be disruption.
Yes.
In some shape or form, there's going to be disruption.
Exactly.
Like the N25 runs a fair bit of a distance all the way up to Calictool.
Exactly.
They're heading. So that's going to be quite a bit. Have we any idea when this is about to start? Or is the consultation process over?
So the planning is beginning in quarter one of next year.
Right.
So that's going to be the first initial phase. And that's where things really will start get going.
Right.
You know, I think that everything up until now is trying to hammer down what exactly the project is going to be about. And basically, from my picture of it, I could kind of see the planning process running throughout 2021. It's going to be a long and arduous process. There's going to be a lot of people. Unfortunately, you know, it has to go through somebody's location and some individual's property.
Right. Are we talking about compulsory land purchase and things like that?
Potentially, I think at stages, not throughout East Cork in the sense that the N25 will be the guiding line, but once you go beyond Middleton and you're heading up towards that direction of the project, there's a substation that has to be built at Knockgraha, and the main station has been built at the Amgen site in Carrigtwohill, which is also quite positive news because that potentially may open up that site for further development again, which was unfortunately something that fell through at the time of the end of the Celtic Tiger. So at that end of it could be a little bit more tricky. It's a bit more straightforward on this side in the sense that it's going to be running all parallel to the road, but it has to come off the road at some point. So that's where things could get tricky with the planning. So giving an accurate timeline, I think, at this stage would be a little bit premature. But what we do need to talk about in Yall, and what we do need to talk about in Killa and West Waterford as well, is what this means for the town. And what this means is that there's going to be jobs and investment. It's going to represent the single largest capital investment ever for Yall at €1 billion, multiple times what we've ever
€1 billion investment.
€1 billion
for Yall.
For the interconnector project, which is running through Yall.
Through Yall.
But what it does mean is that it has the capacity, and it's something I spoke with the Taoiseach about this morning, was the potential for technology hubs and IDA investments to come back to Yall, and hopefully coinciding that with the upgrade of the N25, which is critical for any investor. A bit of good news I would love to share with people as well at home. I was only appointed this week to the Oireachtas Committee on Enterprise and Business. So it's going to be an area I'm going to be putting a lot of focus on, and I'm already on the Oireachtas Transport Committee. So we are lobbying hard as a TD in the town. I am working very, very hard. I'm working quite closely, actually, with, I think, a figure that receives he receives a lot of unfair comments, to be fair. I've worked alongside Eamon Ryan for the Green Party. A lot of people in rural areas don't like Eamon, but to be fair to Eamon, he actually has a soft spot for Yall. Something people mightn't be aware of.
He holidayed here as a child. Somebody has anyway.
He has. And I met Eamon a week before the funding was given to the Greenway. We had a strong discussion about the Greenway, and he was also having a considerable discussion with me as well about the potential for the Yall Greenway to link up with the Waterford one, which would mean eventually you could have a cycle track running all the way from Middleton right on down through Yall down to Wexford, which would be a transformational project. And he's committed to that. And look, I'm very grateful to Eamon. I think I have to thank the man, because he gave €10 million to our Greenway project. It was actually the single largest capital investment in a single Greenway project when the €60 million was announced. There was multiple, more than you could count in pair, two hands, projects were announced recently. But the Yall Middleton one was given the largest investment by the government. So look, I am doing my bit up there, and we are getting results. But it's a slow and arduous process, but at the same time, I'm keeping my shoulder very firmly focused on the work ahead.
Right. What is the state of play with the Greenway at the moment? Like, at this end, it seems to be at a standstill.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what's happening at the other end.
It's a fair observation. A lot of people ask me about it.
Yeah.
So there's three stages to the Greenway. We're currently, we'll say probably a fourth, actually. I'll say four. The original stage was getting everything off the ground and running and getting through Cork County Council and trying to get council backing and working with the shareholders and the councillors, trying to get them to agree. That's all well behind us and done. We're now firmly on to finishing stage one, which was the allocation of the contract for clearing the line. I've been on here on CRY talking about that a few times. That has been allocated. It was a little bit behind schedule, but it's gone ahead, and thankfully that's now underway. The next phase of it was getting the capital sign off on from the government. So that happened in only a few short days ago. So that's very significant. So that allows us to basically finish the project. And it's a match funding project. So the Government of Ireland are paying for 50% of the project, and the other 50% in is coming from our local government, from Cork County Council.
Right.
So it's multifaceted, but it's moving to stage three now, in the sense that the next part now will be the advanced planning in terms of what the Greenway will look, the concept around the design of it. There obviously are problem areas around the area from the bog down to Yall is difficult terrain to be navigating for anybody, and coming up with a design to make sure it's safe. and to make sure that it's
there are a lot of drainage issues out there as well.
There is. I often remember my grandfather Tommy O'Connor was talking long ago around the time when the trains were here, and they used to have the men going down to fix the sluices.
That's right, yeah.
All the time after heavy rain, and it was just fascinating. You know, the times of old, you'd hear fascinating things that are still very relevant and true today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to say that it was definitely. The most difficult part of that, I think, is from throughout the bog and getting that done and designed. That's difficult, but they are working on it, to be fair.
Right. Is there a timeline?
A timeline, I think, I'd say completion hopefully by 2023. I mean,
would it take that long?
I think that, you know, being optimistic, it's going to take throughout 2021 for certain. It's going to take a good part of 2022. But in terms of people being up and cycling on it, if it's ahead of schedule, we could see it in 2022. Right. But I think we have to be realistic. Like, we were given original timelines for the boardwalk. I was supposed to be, I would have actually been a councillor still if the boardwalk was completed under the original timeline. But these things take time. But the good news is that they're happening. The money's there. It's been provided and they're underway, and we're blessed to have that because there's other places in the country are crying out for funding, so it is quite good news. But the Greenway, you know, along with the boardwalk and now the interconnector as well, you know, the opportunity with the interconnector is obviously a little bit more complex in the sense that we have to figure out how we're going to make this work. Our county development plan for Cork County Council is being renewed at the moment. So that means that members of the public who are living in County Cork, and also our councillors, our elected representatives in the Dáil, including myself, should all be feeding into our thoughts and behind that document and what lands should be zoned for what purposes. So it's important to make sure that we have lands that are zoned around the Dáil area. And when I mean the Dáil area now, I mean a kind of a circumference or a radius, should I say, of a couple of miles. You know, it's not just in the immediate vicinity of the town, around lands that could potentially be suitable for industry. So we have to make sure we can identify suitable sites. There are grounds zoned in places like Killa, in Killa Village. I think there's parts of land there that are zoned by Cork County Council for those purposes. But we just need to make sure there's enough, because if we could get one company to come down here and start, it could develop into something, because we all saw what Glaxo have done for Dungarvan. They brought in Eurofins, they brought in different employers, and there's hundreds of people working down there now in well-paid positions and jobs, and my intention for y'all is for that to be the case.
Right. Well, I suppose, speaking on jobs, I'm not sure how many jobs. Do you have any idea what kind of employment this interconnector is going to generate?
It's very difficult to say, because I think the construction phase would obviously be where the jobs will come. We're going to see a significant number of in jobs in construction with it. Now, it's too early yet. I think we'll be in a position to give an answer to that question in the near future.
Yeah.
But I think that the real chance for the jobs will come from if we can get the road network and the interconnected project linked up, and then you'll have the bypass project ongoing as well for Killa and Castle Martyr potentially, which, you know, as of a number of months ago, I didn't even feel was in the cards, in the sense that I thought Castle Martyr may only be the one, but I think potentially Killa could be done too. It's a bit early to say, but we are working on it.
Right.
You come down then, you're looking at a situation, if that was put in place, you have your interconnector, you have your high-speed broadband connection coming in for the continent of Europe, then you're talking about the potential for a digital hub, the same that they have in Clonakilty, and other places in West Cork as well. And the Taoiseach spoke about this morning with me on the phone. So, to be quite frank with people, these things never happened in Yall for the last 50 years. Like, it wasn't since Sean Brosnan's time that we had somebody in government in Dublin for Yall town. And I'm very lucky to be in that position, but it's just important that people would be aware that those are the discussions that are ongoing, and that's the height of which they're to be discussed as well. So recently as well, it's positive news, we saw the Chamber of Commerce as well had met with the Minister of State for the Department of Finance. So I'm doing a lot of good work with Sandra McLennan and her team at the Chamber in Yall, and some of the local businesses as well involved with the Chamber. So that's positive too. So we're trying to do a kind of a community effort, in the sense that we're trying to push as much as we can to get investment in Yall.
Right. Like, down through the years, Yall have been pretty much ignored from the point of view of sustainable employment. We haven't had decent employment in this area since the textile industries closed back in well, certainly all carpets, 2006 was the last of the textile industries to go, or industries to go. We had a few technology industries in the town, like artisan, which gave fine employment for a good number of years. But then we had other employees coming in, or employers coming in, that kind of drifted away after a few years. So we've had no sustainable employment in Youghal. I think the general opinion would be amongst many people in Youghal was that the town was neglected and overlooked by successive governments for quite a number of years. And we're still on the same boat. We have a lot of people working. There's a lot of people employed, living in Youghal that are employed. But unfortunately, they're travelling to other venues up
the
to Carrick.
The money is on the move, as they say in economics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're always considered to be at the end of the line of the county.
Yeah.
You know, that there was no benefits to bringing employment. I can remember, in fact, at a meeting in the Walter Raleigh Hotel a good number of years ago, when the present Taoiseach was Minister for Trade and Enterprise, I think, at the time, back a few years back. And he mentioned at the time there would be the chances of getting employment into Youghal would be practically nil at that stage, that we would have to depend on our own indigenous industries and our own efforts for to try and generate employment locally, which is what we have done to the best of our ability. But that hits a cut-off point. There's a point where you can't go any further with that, where you need central government then to step in and say, yeah, look, this is what we're going. So you think this interconnector has potential to turn you all into a Carrick Tool or a little island?
I think that has definitely got the potential to be the catalyst.
Right.
The catalyst for growth, for jobs, for employment. But this needs to come from proper planning. It needs to come from politicians that are willing to work with one another, which is an issue in East Cork. You know, at the time of the local development plan, or the upcoming review of the county development plan, my apologies, which is a new name for the local development plans, we need to make sure our councillors are very acutely aware that this is ongoing, and they need to make sure that we have correct lands zoned for industry, just to ensure that the capacity is there for investors to come into Youghal if that is realised. We need to ensure that there's unanimous backing of the National Development Plan review, which is a very significant part of the programme for government, to ensure that we get that new road to Cork. Whatever we get, we need it. Whether it is Castlemartyr on its own, or if we're lucky enough to get funding for Castlemartyr and Killa, that would be enormous for the town. It would bring money into the town. It would also make it feasible for investment here. With the upcoming upgrades of Dunkettle as well, it's going to cut the journey times to and from Cork Airport, and also to the new port of Cork as well. And these are very important things for large employers that are considering investing. And, you know, people will say, y'all will never get jobs. That's not the case. We can't be negative. We do need to make sure that we keep a relentless effort. And I think you're dead right. You said y'all had a feeling, a sense that it was being neglected and left behind. It was. And it was because I think we lacked somebody at a national level. I would ask people sincerely for the cooperation. I know I'm a new young representative, and to a lot of people that can be a difficult thing to swallow. But I can promise people I have experience. I've worked for a former minister for Jobs, Enterprise and Innovation. I studied economics and business as well, and I have a big interest in that particular area, and I'm on the correct committees as well in the Dáil. So I'm very fortunate that I have the capacity to develop those links, and I just need, I suppose, a sense of cooperation with our local representatives here and also with the community as well. So we all need to get behind it and work together. Like, there's no point in denying the Airgrid project is controversial. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
No, that's for sure, yeah.
But we're lucky it's underground, so there's no pylons. We're very fortunate in that. That causes an awful lot of, it's causing an awful lot of issue, actually, for my colleagues in the northern side of the Republic, above in Cavan and Monaghan and these places, because it's going overground and in Meath. So, lucky we don't have pylons, it's underground. It's a different style of power transmission as well. I'm not an electrical engineer, but I do know that underground is a different system. So we just have to be cute, is the word, it's probably the most appropriate word, in how we try and manage this, all of us as a town, and as our as local representatives, and me as a TD as well, because look, I'm very blessed to be first time TD, being immediately put into a party that's in government. I know it's a horrifically difficult time for a lot of people out there, and there's an awful lot of people unhappy, and rightly so, but this is one of those opportunities that you only get once in a generation, and I think it's important that people would realise that.
Good. So you're entirely happy with the whole project. You think it's going to have huge benefits for the town and for East Cork in general?
Entirely, I suppose, would be a strong word, in the sense that I still think that I'm working with Airgrid. I was talking to them this morning. I'm meeting again in a number of weeks around Killa and Castlemartyr. Like, it's unacceptable that after all the pain and suffering that commuters and people living in those locations went through, sure people in Ladysbridge and Killa and Mogheely and the whole shebang, their lives were nearly ruined from going up and down the road waiting 20 minutes, 30 minutes for roadworks, and yeah, the idea of ripping them up again, pointless. So my view is that we need to get the interconnector on the same route as the potential relief roads for two of those villages whenever they may come, and to make sure that those projects follow them. And we have backup for that from government. The Taoiseach wants it to happen. I certainly want it to happen. I met with them on a one-to-one to make sure that we can try and get funding. And we'll know in the near future what the status of those projects will be.
I gather that the government are meeting today to have a chat about the exit strategy for coming out of Level 5. And it would appear there were some reports this morning that the Taoiseach made a statement to the Cork Examiner that we would be heading to Level 3 with a few tweaks here and there. I was listening to one of the Vintners leaders this morning on Morning Ireland suggesting that all pubs should be allowed to open regardless of what type of pubs they are. There's also issues, we had certain issues around the town here as well, I'm sure in every town in Ireland, about what was essential and what wasn't essential. A typical example, I was in a supermarket yesterday, or Saturday, with my grandson. He wanted to look at toys. He couldn't. They were closed off. But yet, 10 metres away, there was people filling up trolleys with drink.
Yes.
With alcohol.
So yeah.
That can't be right. How can you have toys coming up to Christmas not essential and alcohol essential?
Yes.
It doesn't seem right.
Lockdowns are not fair.
No, they're not. No.
They're not fair. I think it's worth saying. I would be quite Machiavellian. It's probably the word I'd use in my approach to restrictions. I have to say that it has been horrendously difficult for local businesses who've had to shut their doors. Some of them may never come back, and that has been difficult for me even to live with, that we all had a role in that, in the sense of being representatives, and it's a difficult thing to deal with. I love the idea of promoting small businesses, particularly in towns like Youghal. I think there's certainly it's a start of business. I think we're going to see a return to in the future with more people working from home. But the restrictions are not fair, and I've heard a man in the street lately. I know it was on television, but when I heard somebody say it in the street, it really resonated with me. Was that he could go into a shop and buy a coat for his dog, but he couldn't buy a coat for his grandchild, and I really did feel that when it was said. But we have to acknowledge they are working. We are the leading country in the European Union. I think we're the second highest country in the European Union, keeping your case count low. The virus for a good part of the end of November was spiralling out of control in throughout the European continent, but in Ireland we've kept it low. And the pain with coronavirus comes when the hospitals are overloaded and intensive care beds are overloaded. We never arrived at that point in Ireland. We were blessed, an absolute miracle, it didn't happen, and that came from the hard sweat and tears of our healthcare professionals, our nurses and our doctors out there, and the people who worked in the supermarkets and on the pharmacy shop floors and local businesses as well, to keep people at home and kept them happy and satisfied. But I have to say that it has to be acknowledged that they're not fair. And I was talking to vintners this morning as well. I understand that there's a lot of people out there deeply annoyed and frustrated. They want to be able to go out and have a pint at Christmas and to be able to meet people and to be socialising at Christmas. But this Christmas, I think it's not going to be the same. I'm not going to lie to people out there. It's not for me to tell anybody how they should celebrate Christmas in their own houses, and I don't think the government should do that either. But I do feel that I think it would be misrepresentative for any TD in the country, and deeply responsible as well, I would say, for them to come on air and say that they feel the pubs should be open for popularity, or the nightclubs should be open for popularity in Stephen's Night, so on and so forth, which some have done, which is crazy. And I think there's an acceptance, I think, amongst many publicans, not all publicans, but many publicans, that's the case. And I'm very hopeful that the vaccination progress will be ramped up. I was very fortunate, actually. I got a chance to question the chief virologist for the National Public Health Emergency Team. It got Dr. Killian de Gascoigne along with Dr. Toolan, the CMO, a short time ago at the Oireachtas committee they were in before us. And I put the question to him. I said, how long do you think we'll be in this cycle where we're going in and out of restrictions and things like what you've outlined to me happen? And they said until the effective vaccine is going to arrive. And fortunately, since that committee appearance, Pfizer's and also the Eli Lilly have been making significant progress on their individual vaccines. Oxford University as well had done a lot of work on them. And I hope and pray, and I really do hope and pray that at this time next year that we'll all be enjoying the normal run up to Christmas, that people will be back working where they belong, and that a lot of people who are out of the job at the minute will have employment and income. So 2020 has been a horrible, horrible year, and I'm looking forward to the new year, and hopefully it'll bring better things with it.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen on social media the shameful scenes in around the various cities, particularly Dublin and Cork, over the weekend, and in other areas as well. And that's been going on for quite some time, not just last weekend, but several weekends during the course of the year. How do you explain to those people that this is not acceptable? Like, we know there are laws, but they can be implemented, but the Gardaí have been instructed to engage rather than enforce. It doesn't appear to be working too well.
It doesn't, and unfortunately the median age now of COVID cases, so around the average age of COVID cases that is there is 28. So 28 years of age is bearing in mind I'm only 23. That's worrying. It shows that those that are out and about are from a younger age group. There's a lack of understanding of the dangers of this virus. I think that comes from the fact that we never hit that tipping point that Italy hit, and that what they had in Wuhan and China, and even in throughout the United States as well. And thank God we never got there. But people never saw in Ireland what that could potentially do. My own opinion on that, and it's something I spoke about with the HSC when we had our regional health forum meeting at Páirc Uí Chaoimh some time ago, that it would be important that we would advertise to younger people and get influencers involved, like hurling stars, who would do it free of charge. I think a lot of them, would sports stars, would do that out of the good of their own heart. I think that the HSC could certainly have done more on that. And I think there's a lack of understanding. You must remember, and it's an interesting thing to point out, because it's something I found actually throughout my 5 years now involved in politics and 2 years as an elected representative, that you always have an age gap. So by the time people are hitting secretary general level in government departments, or the chief executives of councils, or in senior positions in local authorities, they have a whole career behind them. And I think there's a level of quite headstrong, in a sense that they wouldn't be willing to accept newer methods. And that's been a huge problem during the pandemic, in the sense that, you know, there's been lots of advertising in television, there's been lots of advertising in newspapers, but you're not going to find your average teenager reading the Irish Times on a Saturday. So that is an issue, and we have to accept that the media consumption patterns of people have changed, and they're always changing. And I haven't seen enough on Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat or these things to encourage people to remain at home. But there has been some horrible stories. I've actually dealt with a couple of families who've had people who've died of COVID-19 earlier on in the pandemic. And I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it, because it was harrowing, the circumstances some of those families were put through. I dealt with a woman, and she didn't even get to attend her own father's funeral. And, you know, it hits home to you when you hear things like that.
Yeah.
Because that was the stage when we had no protocol, we didn't know what we were dealing with earlier on in the year. And that's been the case for so many people. And younger people, by the best part, although in some cases they can get very sick, the real risk is when you pass it on to somebody who has an underlying health condition. Because we saw the outbreaks in nursing homes. And I have to be fair to my neighbour, Mary Butler, over the bridge from Waterford. Mary is the Minister with Responsibility for Nursing Homes, and she has been absolutely fantastic since she got into her job. And she's working incredibly hard, to be fair to any of the ministers. I have a lot of cooperation with Mary, and I've worked with her down through the years. But that is one very, very difficult portfolio at the minute. And they're putting a lot of resources into it. But if you have an outbreak in a nursing home, it spreads like wildfire. And unfortunately, the results of it can be tragic.
Then I think, was it this week that Hickwell went into a nursing home in Kerry? And the HSC went in and decided they were taking it over, a private nursing home.
Yes, it was 8 fatalities, I think, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah, and the whole system was totally awry in there, just no system at all in there, at all of safety. Before we go, can I just mention, there's a lot of controversy going on at the moment about Minister McEntee and her willingness to answer questions in relation to the appointment of Seamus Wolfe to the Supreme Court, without getting into the merits of whether he should resign or whether whatever is going to happen. But the government pretty much have passed it back to the judiciary to sort it out, in line with the recommendations of the former Chief Justice, that it should be dealt with internally. There seems to be a strong view from the opposition parties that the manner in which Minister McEntee is going to come into the Dáil and deal with the questions is not acceptable. I think questions have to be submitted by Wednesday of this week. They want a direct question and answer situation, and obviously that's not going to happen. But I think Minister McEntee spoke this morning on LMFM, and she actually mentioned this morning that she had considered other applicants for the position, but recommended Seamus Wolfe to the government. But I think the big question was, did she inform the cabinet or the minister, the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, and the Green Party leader of those names? Was there a requirement on her to do that?
So it's difficult in the sense that basically to explain to so many people where the controversy here is arising from the Oireachtas failing to deal with the situation is around the constitutional ramifications of such and the separations of power. They're very, very clear. I did a lot of study of the Irish Constitution my time in, when I was full-time in higher education, and it is very, very clear that we wouldn't end up in a situation, for example, like they have in Poland, where you will now have a political setup where it's interfering in the judiciary, which is lethal. You basically have a situation then where the judiciary's decisions are not necessarily reflective of fair and just society, and there's very clear reasons behind that. However, I think it's important that people would be aware that the process of appointing judges in Ireland is obviously the gift of the government of the day and the Minister for Justice as well. Seamus Wolfe, I feel he's obviously brought a lot of politicians into a very difficult situation through his own actions, which I think were very silly. That Golfgate dinner was a disaster. Shouldn't have happened. They shouldn't have gone ahead. I myself was not at it anyway. But from the point of view of dealing with it, my view is that Minister McEntee should go on the media. In terms of her statements before the Dáil, obviously when everything you say within the Dáil chamber, you've Dáil privilege, so she's been incredibly careful what she does say when she's been questioned. So I can understand why the questions have to be submitted in advance. It could be covered by under leaders' questions under a separate format, but questions being put to the Taoiseach where those restrictions are not in place, which is one route the opposition could take by going to a more senior level if they wish to do that, which they've tried repeatedly. And they've raised it repeatedly, but I honestly, from my perspective here, I think in terms of the statements before the Dáil, we'll see what will come of it. But I think at an earlier stage, Minister McEntee should have gone out. I think it was a mistake of her not to come out any sooner, or at this stage, it's so late in the process. But it's just remarkably tricky. Constitutionally, it's remarkably tricky.
Right.
We have a responsibility like to uphold the Constitution. I think. That's not a cop-out for people who think it is. It's a very precious document that we can change as a society if we wish. And we obviously have to be mindful of that. And I would say there is a degree of recklessness there, and I'm not into bashing other political parties, and I won't name any names now, but I do think one particular political party's respect for law and justice in Ireland would not be of the same holding as the remainder of the political parties. Everybody else, one of them sticks out in my own mind, who have led the battle on this one. And they were wrong to do so, because I don't think they have any leg to stand on, to be quite frank.
Right. Do you think it's time to change the whole system of appointing to judiciary in this country? Like, there seems to be a perception out there that it's an old boys club. If you're an activist or a member of the party in government and you get to the stage where you put yourself in the frame for a position, the likelihood is you'll get it because you're one of the boys. Like Shane Ross's bill, for instance, has been sitting, gathering dust since during the year. That bill, by all accounts, was considered highly by a lot of TDs on all sides of the House, but yet it's sitting there gathering dust, which was supposed to put an end to all of this. That bill, by all accounts, would have put an end to all of this. Do you think it needs to change the appointments process?
I think the appointments process has a lot of flaws. It has definitely got a lot of flaws. And I think from a point of view of political parties being involved in the appointment of judges, obviously we need some democratic oversight of the judicial process. But in America, for example, they have the committee set up where judges could be brought before the committees there and questioned at length by elected representatives, and that would be shown to the public. Perhaps that's something we should try and consider expanding on in Ireland and looking at as a potential way of doing it. Obviously it has its ramifications. You know, at the end of the day, a judge has to come to a conclusion in every case. It might not be always what the court of public opinion might say or agree with. And I wouldn't like to see a situation perhaps where where you had somebody that was in a senior judiciary role applying for, or for a junior judiciary role after judging, you know, passing judgment on cases, that was applying to join the Supreme Court, for example, and they were put into a position where they had to defend past actions in terms of their legal work. We've seen that being tried. Actually, a former boss of mine, Jim O'Callaghan, TD, was one of Ireland's, still is, one of Ireland's most respected senior counsels, barristers in the country. And Jim has represented everybody from Justin Timberlake to Gerry Adams. So international stars and everything would have gone to Jim for his work in libel and defamation cases. And that's thrown at him politically for the work he's done in that, which I don't think is fair, because it's the man's career. So I think if you look at it from the scope of what currently has been done to some people because of their work as their in their legal profession, it's not necessarily one that, you know, it's without its flaws and what I just proposed there in terms of having a kind of a committee approval on judicial appointments.
Right. So you could, can we say that the government have finished with that process now? It's gone back to the judiciary?
I certainly hope so, and right. I say because it's been a huge distraction. I think that there's bigger issues at hand than a golfing dinner. There's bigger issues at hand than people in RTÉ having a bash above, and they were wrong. They should get a rap over the knuckles for it, give up a month's pay or something. But I think we all went too far. Like, I look at Phil Hogan, he's incredibly arrogant what he did. There's no doubt, no questioning that. But we damaged a very important role that we had in Europe. We lost it because of a game of golf and a dinner. Yeah. And he actually broke no law.
Right.
And I see situations like these arising repeatedly. A lot of people will come to me saying, you know, X, Y, and Z is wrong. But if you start pointing out flaws with everything, restrictions or whatever you're trying to point out, you could go all day long. And then you end up with very sorry circumstances after, and dividing people too. And I would say with Seamus, I will just call it what it was. It was stupid. With Phil Hogan, it was stupid. But like, you have to ask yourself the question, are you going to end two careers like that for that reason?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Do you think Paul Murphy's motion will gain any traction?
I think it will be discussed heavily in the media, particularly because of the interest around the constitutional separation of powers, and the journalists will have a very keen interest in that. You know, there's the political journalists in Leinster House, and by most parts are very tuned in to issues like this because they are quite complex. It's an interesting story to be writing on. So I do think that we're going to hear quite a bit about it.
Right.
We have a few controversial bills coming up this week, with the Greyhound Bill as well. So that's going to be discussed this week, but which is a worry actually. I think that after all the work we put into trying to save the dog track in Youghal,
and I put
a very significant amount of work and time into that to keep it open. There seems to be a growing lobby against that sport, which is not necessarily very good news for that industry overall.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there.
James,
thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it. That was James O'Connell there, our Fianna Fáil TD for Cork East. Once again, thanks again.
Thank you very much.